Peter B. Collins News and Comment. Friday, August 29, 2014. Summer vacation ends with the Labor Day holiday. While Americans vacationed and tuned out. While Congress has been absent from Washington and absent from most important critical decisions. The groundwork has been laid for a new war party coming later this year.
I'm looking for you. I can't believe what they say about you is true. That you're a bastard just like Pharaoh. You kill the children just like Pharaoh. Now you send a ticket for me. You don't have RSVP. Oh Lord, it's a war party.
Me don't want to go.
Everybody seems to be inviting me to a war.
That's from the Peter B. Collins Tax Deductible Music Archives. It's Eddie Grant, and it's called War Party. Me no want to go. And the President of the United States yesterday flatly accused Russia of invading Ukraine. And in fact, Obama used nuanced language. He said it was not an invasion, but some sort of an incursion, a little visit. His UN ambassador, Samantha Power, was more blunt and direct. And in reaction, Vladimir Putin doesn't really deny it, but he blames Ukraine. He says the Ukrainian army is the villain of this little soap opera because it's been targeting residential areas of towns and cities, Putin says, like German troops did to the former Soviet Union. And Putin made a pointed reference to, you know, potential pushback in the Arctic, where Russia and Western rivals, as the ice cap melts, perhaps permanently, are rushing to exploit the natural resources, I believe mostly oil, perhaps some natural gas, that is believed to be deposited under the seabed there. Now, this seems a little far-fetched, frankly, to try to inject that into this current conflict, but Obama keeps talking about more and more economic sanctions and how this is a He says Russia is already more isolated than at any time since the end of the Cold War. Capital is fleeing. Investors are increasingly staying out. Its economy is in decline. And the ruble on Friday fell to an all-time low against the dollar. But Putin, again, while not actually denying that Russian troops and tanks and other war-making machinery has crossed over into eastern Ukraine. One of the excuses offered is, well, yeah, you know, there are some Russian soldiers who are fighting there, but they're on vacation. And they decided to use their holiday time to support their brothers in arms in Ukraine. And so the picture is reinforced by NATO allies, presumably using the same talking points as those that originate in Washington. And Ukraine today raised the stakes a little further because Arseniy Yatsenyuk, who is the prime minister, said that he is going to try to get Ukraine to join NATO. And this, of course, is a real emotional flashpoint that I believe is at the basis of Russia's actions. Putin has said enough to having his nation encircled by countries that used to be part of the Soviet Union and that are being allowed entry into NATO as a way to isolate Russia. Now, we have to recall that Putin controls the natural gas supply, and the colder it gets in Europe and Ukraine, the more leverage he will have as we head into this winter. And the president's remarks yesterday, as I noted, were quite mixed, and the mixed messages have, spawned some pretty sharp criticism from his Republican opponents. And it's pretty easy to take pot shots at the president and just accuse him of doing nothing, even though Republicans don't have a better idea of what something would be when they call on him to do something. And I credit the president with flatly saying that we will not attempt a military resolution to the dispute between Ukraine and Russia. But on the Middle East, he said, wait a minute, regarding Syria, we don't have a strategy yet. And this inflamed some of his opponents. And I do think that it was a blunder for the president to put it in those terms. And by leaving the options open here, it's a playground for opponents who can really posture as hawks and as, you know, great defenders of America without having to actually put anything on the line. The Republicans are extremely good at that, and I think Obama gave them an important opening in this respect. Now, I don't oppose trying to rally regional neighbors and America's allies for some sort of a consensus response to the what I consider to be a limited threat posed by the Islamic State in Syria and Iraq. But my fear is that it'll just be more window dressing like we've seen of the coalitions of the billing in the past. And that once again, the clear perception will be that America, the imperialist, is once again on a military march on Islamic soil in a very contentious part of the world. One of the stories that has surfaced among many about barbaric acts by the Islamic State is that at least four of the recently held captives, including American journalist Jim Foley, were waterboarded. And this is one of the things that I've been warning about ever since Cheney started talking about the dark side, ever since it became clear that America was throwing out its standards and getting down to the level of barbaric people by engaging in torture, the offshore prison at Guantanamo, all of these efforts, which someday we'll know more about when the Senate Intelligence Committee's report, heavily redacted though it will be, will at least see the light of day. And our friend and colleague Jason Leopold, reporting at vicenews.com, says that based on a letter from a prisoner at Guantanamo, there is a new crackdown on the prisoners that includes beatings of multiple prisoners. Now, one of the things that we've covered with attorney John Eisenberg is the lawsuits that he has filed on behalf of prisoners and in support of the British charity called Reprieve to stop the force feeding of inmates who volunteer to hunger strike. And the man who wrote this letter is a citizen of Yemen who's been cleared for release since 2009. His name is Imad Hassan. And he remains there because there is this unofficial rule that no one can leave Guantanamo who is Yemeni, because Yemen is a failed state and we can't control what happens to them when they are repatriated. I believe there are more than 40 men in that status. And so Hassan has written a letter saying that the what's called FCE, forced cell extraction, this is a tactic that has been used to rough up hunger strikers who are told to report for force feeding, and then they are forcibly removed from their cells. It's unclear if in some cases these individuals resist and that the cell extraction is required. But Shakir Amer, who is a fairly high-profile prisoner at Guantanamo, he's the one who shouted out when Leslie Stahl was taking a tour of one of the cell blocks with the commandant. And Leslie Stahl of 60 Minutes exposed her own ignorance. She didn't even know who Shakir Amer is. Shaka Rahmer was beaten. The medical team drew blood by force. Hassan says that another prisoner was subjected to a beating that broke his hand, and another is unable to walk because his leg was twisted. Now, this comes at a time when Obama has sent clear signals that he wants to close Guantanamo. And there is no indication of any orchestrated effort to defy the guards that can justify this crackdown. I hope that some people will pay attention and we can bring this to a halt. Yesterday, I made some comments slamming the public television news hour for a comment by Gwen Ifill in Wednesday night's broadcast when she ignorantly and inaccurately compared the case of John Lind, the California man who was detainee 001 in the War on Terror. John Lind was fighting for the Afghan government, then run by the Taliban, when he was picked up by U.S. forces in the fall of 2001. And today, at the nation's website, thenation.com, his father, Frank Lind, has published an article called How John Walker Lind Became Detainee 001. And I encourage you to read it, and somebody who knows Gwen Ifill, can you encourage her to read it? So that she doesn't just accept the Rumsfeld and Justice Department propaganda that John Walker Lind was the American Taliban and somehow a traitor to his country? It's simply not true. Today we conducted and released an in-depth interview for our subscribers at peterbcollins.com, and we talk about the upcoming vote in the Senate on an important resolution for a constitutional amendment to fix the Supreme Court's blunders on campaign finance law, starting with Buckley versus Valeo, and more recently the McCutcheon and Citizens United decisions. And in the conversation, we talk with Professor Tim Kuhner from Georgia State University College of Law. He has a new book out called Capitalism versus Democracy, and he offers a sharp critique of the Roberts Court, as you can hear in this excerpt.
The Roberts Court has employed a radical form of free market ideology to reinterpret the Constitution into what I call the free market Constitution. And under the guidance of this radical ideology, the court has taken us down the road to plutocracy, which is government by or in the interest of the wealthy. And some of the very memorable ways they've done this is through devices such as money as speech, corporations as citizens, democracy as a market, political equality and democratic integrity as unconstitutional rationales for limiting expenditures and donations. And it's important that the public know that when they look at the $1 billion per candidate presidential election, the 10 million per Senate, the million for the House of Representatives, that they're looking at a world that the court allowed to happen.
You can hear the full interview with Professor Kuhner, and we're joined by Jonah Minkoff Zern from Public Citizen. And he is championing the Senate vote, which is scheduled for September 8th on Senate Resolution 119. And I hope you'll listen to the interview and take his cue to contact Democrats who have not taken a position on the bill, and not a single Republican has come out in support of it. So it's a critical vote. Because of all the other politics, it could be more of a symbolic vote. But I do think it's important for those of us who want to clean up the corruption in our political campaign system. And speaking of money, there are people who every month support my podcast with their subscription dollars, like Samadu Yahaya, Michelle Pasco in Sacramento, James Hallwell, who lives in Northern California, and Robert Byrd recently extended his annual subscription. I thank each and every one of you. And if you're not a subscriber, here's your big chance. If you've got money in the bank, come on over to peterbcollins.com. Under my picture on the homepage, there's a link that says sign up. When you click it, you get a choice, $5, $10, $20 a month, whatever fits your budget. Our best deal is the $50 annual subscription, and new annual subscribers in the U.S. earn a bonus gift It's a copy of John Dist's great rock and roll CD called Red Flag. Well, updating you on a few developments, there are 43 UN peacekeepers, all from the nation of Fiji, who were captured yesterday in the Golan Heights. That is the area that borders Syria and Israel. And we, at this point, I don't have any update on their status. And in the initial reports, it wasn't even known whether they were captured by IS, the al-Nusra Front, or one of the other rebel groups attempting to take down the Assad government in Syria. In addition to the 43 who were being held, 81 troops from the Philippines appear to be entrapped and their movements are restricted because I guess they're surrounded by enemy fighters. So that's a serious situation. We will keep an eye on that. There is a proposal from France that European Union troops become the peacekeepers between Israel, Egypt, and the Gaza Strip. And I'm intrigued by this because the U.S. and the U.N., for various reasons, don't have much credibility. And I certainly don't think the United States needs to deploy troops on another front. And I'm glad to see President Hollande of France surface this proposal. We'll see where that one goes. Also in Europe, the recent war on Gaza, 50 days of terrorism from the skies, caused mostly by Israelis, has led to a real growth in the movement in Europe to boycott Israel. Now, activists in the United States, including those aligned with the Presbyterian Church USA, have been promoting the idea of boycott, divestment, and there's an S on there, boycott, divestment, and sanctions. That's what it is. And, for example, in England, a branch of the Sainsbury grocery chain has removed kosher products from the shelves to prevent anti-Israel demonstrations. The Tricycle Theatre in North London, after hosting a Jewish film festival for 8 years, demanded to vet the content of any film made with arts funding from the Israeli government. And so all across Europe, people are very sensitive to the brutal, bullying role that Israel played in its disproportionate attack on Gaza this summer. And it does appear that Israel will pay some price for that. Yesterday, I mentioned that the White House has been threatening that soon as next week, the president may announce a unilateral executive action to ease the immigration crisis in this country. And it appears that he is going to delay that, kind of like the Keystone XL pipeline, until after this November's election. And I've been cautioning about this on a purely political analysis, that the projections are already very bad for Democratic chances at the polls this November. Gerrymandering pretty well locks in Republicans' control of the House. And the Senate races that are up for contest this November are expected to favor more Republicans than Democrats, shifting control. And so with that in mind, the president back in June had said that he would act unilaterally by the end of the summer. But in remarks to reporters yesterday, Obama hinted at the possibility of a delay. So I'm not surprised by that. Just a quick note, we have been following for some years now the events of September 16, 2007 that occurred in Nisour Square in Baghdad, where Blackwater killers opened fire and gunned down innocent people. And this trial in the United States of four of the Blackwater employees will go to a jury next week. I'll be very interested to see what they find. A fracking study that was commissioned by the U.S. Bureau of Land Management here in California found that half of the oil wells that have been fracked here have put at risk the groundwater, aquifers, and other water supplies that are closer to the surface. And this is a very significant threat. Nonetheless, The BLM, issuing the report, says that it will start offering leases in California again. They had suspended leases while they conducted this study. The authors of the report noted that much of the information that they'd hoped to find about fracking and other forms of well stimulation does not yet exist. So this is a report based on insufficient data, but they got a report and the BLM is going to let the oil barons drill for more of that black gold. I want to take a moment here to recommend an important article that a friend on Facebook shared with me. It's written by Ronald Howell, who teaches journalism at Brooklyn College. He's an African American who has written critically of the Reverend Al Sharpton over the years. And I really appreciate his candor and the timing of this latest article. I'll link to it in the show file for this podcast at peterbcollins.com. And the headline reads, "The Media Need Al Sharpton More Than Black America Does." And Dr. Howell has some very blunt criticism. He says, "How did Sharpton, an MSNBC commentator, a close confidant not only of the mayor of New York but of the president of the United States, how did he get to be one of the leading loud and angry demonstrations, protesting the police killings of black men one after another? Answer, the media put him there." And this is a very important point. Al Sharpton is designated by the corporate media in this country as a spokesman for black America. He's never been elected. He's never been chosen by any African-American organization or group of them. And I find this very interesting. Howell goes through the history of Tawana Brawley, that case in the 1980s, where Sharpton went public, launched these protests saying that Tawana had been sexually attacked by white cops. And the story unraveled. And it's one of the reasons that I can never extend real credibility to Al Sharpton. And Howell writes, "Let me be clear. I'm a black man with a black son, two black grandsons, so I feel gratitude for those standing up against police killers of Eric Garner on Staten Island and Michael Brown in Ferguson. I once told Sharpton that I greatly admired his ability to muster angry black crowds to protest police actions. But I would venture to say many thousands of black people, feel an irrepressible queasiness watching Sharpton on MSNBC or when he ventures into the political arena. Mostly this is based on knowing his past and assuming that while people change in many surface respects, for instance, losing 150 pounds in his James Brown hairdo, there are some things having to do with character that remain implanted and presumably determine underlying motives." Well, I think this is a very clear and principled critique of Al Sharpton. I hope you'll take the time to read it and maybe put it up on Facebook and share it with your friends. As we observe Labor Day and honor organized labor and just regular working people who may not belong to a union, it's comforting to hear that Arthur T. Demoulas has regained control of the Market Basket supermarket chain in New England. This is a victory for the workers who chose him over his cousin, Arthur S. Demoulas. There was a struggle for control of the company, and Arthur T. had to find some outside investors and basically buy control of the company. He's a man who's been very generous to workers, pretty generous to consumers, too. And so I'm glad to see that public action and workers in particular made a big difference in that case. And finally, I want to salute Germans and the people at Daimler-Benz, the German automaker. According to an op-ed in Friday's New York Times, written by Clive Thompson, if you work for Daimler and you have a vacation or a long holiday weekend like this one, they're allowed to set their corporate email to holiday mode. Anyone who emails them gets an auto reply saying that that person isn't in, offering contact details for someone who's on call. and then poof, the incoming email is deleted so that employees don't have to return to inboxes engorged with digital missives in their absence. So I hope that if you really want to enjoy this long holiday weekend, that you'll unplug from the internets, turn off your smartphone, ignore any emails that you get that are work-related, and just say, chill out, baby. I'll get back to you when I'm good and ready. Thanks for listening to my news and comment, my ranting and raving. You're invited to share this podcast with absolutely anyone. And I hope you enjoy yourselves a great Labor Day weekend.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until